Here, as it is said by the great Jhamgo Lama Tsongkhapa, Sambhatsa Nasada Lamyasan, if your heart is good, the journey on the path will be smooth. If your heart is evil or bad, the journey on the path will be bad. Everything depends on your attitude or your mind. Indeed, so it all boils down to the quality of your intent and your mind with regard to the quality of the outcome you want to achieve.
So how
do we know that one has good heart or somebody else has a good heart? One or others could be said to have a good heart if everything is utterly selfless, particularly wanting to achieve the state of a Buddhahood in order to become perennial source of good and happiness at all times for others. If one has that universal altruism, utterly selfless, then that would be the benchmark, the highest benchmark of good heart. Alternatively, one would also say to have good heart if one has this resolve. If you can't help other people, you will never harm them and leave people and animals to themselves. So, how is it that if you have a good heart, then your journey on the path to Buddhahood, path to enlightenment, is smooth and plain sailing, if you like? It is so because if you have the highest form of good heart, which is bodhicitta or universal altruism, to work selflessly for others, then you will be constantly thought of by Buddhas, for Buddhas, Buddhas indeed like people and beings who are like-minded, As well as that, you will also be loved and cared for by Bodhisattvas, for bodhisattvas are great beings on the path to Buddhahood, yet undergoing training of a selfless attitude combined with the wisdom understanding true nature of reality. Thirdly, your journey on the path would be smooth in that there are what we call Dharma protectors who have transcendent protectors of the teaching who have vowed before the Buddha that they will look after those people who apply themselves to developing or who devote themselves to sound practice on their way to Buddhahood. On all accounts, or on these accounts, you can see that if you have the good heart, your journey on the path, therefore it's going to be quite sound and smooth.
Tētā tōma gāwa xēne rāngi yāni xiawa kāyānda dhūlīng bēnda rāngi xiawa rāngi tētā dōngbō xētā yāku chāngi rāngi yōrwa.
So, when you have the highest form of a good heart, universal altruism, then all these three categories of beings, Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and transcendent protectors of the teaching, all will care for one, look after one's well-being and one's progress. And therefore, whatever you embark on will be nothing for yourself as things you will want to do for others. So whatever you embark on will be successful.
Huh?
Whether it's humans or animals, everybody likes people who love them, who like them, and who translate their sense of love into actions of material help, help in terms of offering skills and helping in various ways. And as a result, in their eyes, one becomes popular, one becomes highly likable person. It is not force that works in terms of bringing people around you. If you, for some reason, want to subjugate, control people by force, you may succeed temporarily, but deep down, there will be resentment against you in their heart. Therefore, they will never like you. And in time, in fact, you will fall prey to their force. On the other hand, if one has utterly selfless love for other people, then what you will end up doing is what they want, what they need, and what, doing whatever you can for their well-being, for their happiness. And therefore, as I said before, whoever you, is helpful to you, you can't help liking that person and wanting to do things and wanting to listen to such a person in the same way. So those people who one has reached out, touched their hearts through selfless deeds, would naturally warm up to one and would listen to what one has to say. So, if there is a great number of people who you have reached out, who you have won through love, selfless deeds, then they have unwittingly become your protectors, in that, in case, just in case somebody else wants to act upon your life or want to harm one, so these people won't allow such a negative thing happen to one. Not that they will use force against the aggressor, but the majority force, the mere presence of them will be a deterrent. So these people and others who will be influenced by them will end up lending their hand, their assistance in bringing success to various undertakings that you want to embark on or you have embarked on. So that's why if you have a good heart, sambhasangla means if you have a good heart, then the progression on the path will be good. So I've explained this in a raw human experience terms. But it happens or not, it remains to be seen. There's a saying among Tibetans that if a good hearted, selfless person touches plants and trees, such a touch is like a shot in the arm for the tree, for the growth, and the plants grow much better. And that is literally followed through in farming practice. Therefore, during sowing season, the first seeds that farmers throw into the field would be given to a person acknowledged in the community to be of a kindest heart. Such a person would be requested to scatter the seeds.
Right. That somebody is going to start the line of zone thing. That means the laring is dying on the day. That nothing has to be there was a minute. Give it was a joke on my side. That's what we did. That temple zombo, that champagne, the Yawaina, the champagne tea on the Chunju Sanchez. Chunju Sanchez, and a bit of the Sanji in it, Junjumi. They chugging it, and start the lamb, you got zombo, 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 zombo.
So let's bring this quotation in the Lamrim context. So here we are talking about if one has a good heart, and then that good heart will pave the way for the heart to develop the highest form of good heart, which is bodhicitta, the desire to achieve the state of a Buddha for the sake of all other beings. So this good heart, this seeming mundane good heart, will pave the way for the development of a highest good heart. So that is, if you have bodhicitta in your heart, then you already are on the path to Buddhahood.
그래서
with this ordinary good heart leading to developing the highest good heart, then it is possible for one to develop the state of Dhammakaya, Rupakaya, Sambhogakaya, the three enlightened states, which in themselves then reach out to innumerable numbers of beings and bring about innumerable benefit to them all. So this good heart is really rooted or grounded in Dewa. Dewa means love or compassion. Obviously, if one doesn't have sense of empathy and compassion, then the good heart, the selfless good heart, will never grow. So the good heart or the compassion grounded good heart is likened to three things by the great Indian master Chandrakirti. He says the compassion grounded good heart is like a seed, and at the beginning, and in the middle stage, it is like heat, moisture, and the manure for the quick and potent germination. In the end, or at the end, compassion grounded good heart is like the final culmination of final culmination of the crop. In other words, the full ripening of the crop. So, compassion-grounded good heart is indispensable at all stages.
Oh yes, that's the kardata yemedi. Madu yeva yina da yemon gibi paro bola kardata hemba yan adam chimbo toyin bori en ja chimbo chita topa noji ge rani yiji la teno teto yi topa yin da rani yiji teno kaze topa chen shi ya noji ge rani yiji ge se mama kwa debi ge dedu pacha do cheba ma baya da adam pe tadi kendo chimbo yungo ye da rani yiji dedu pacha da yin de rani ne nada ta pen teche marun bazo de kanka ma shi yungo wa
so as a result, when you have a good heart or the compassionate grounded good heart, then you are able to reach out to as many beings as possible, and therefore such selfless deeds performed with regard to many beings will end up getting merit for one, not for your own good, but for your growth, but for your selfless growth for others. The merit for their growth needs to come from others, from others out of your selfless good heart. And as a result, when you have the merit, then all your wishes would come to an end, would rather come to fruition, and the merit would also help one keep at bay negative propensities, harmful agents like sickness, and so on.
What is it? That's a Toma, and it comes on both. That's the issue. I'm going to say, Lauren, never in a long period, but go she intends in a tub. Moro is on you, but in jail, Tonji.
So, in the light of these, as you can see, the outcome that you want to achieve really is determined the quality of the outcome that you achieve, you want to achieve, is entirely determined by the mindset or the intention one has for the action, for the outcome you set out right from the beginning. So if you all give and receive Buddhist teachings on the stages of the path to Buddhahood with such a good heart, then we will all end up gathering quite a beneficial outcome. So, initially it's important to have motivation, but mere motivation will not bring anything. You need to embark on the journey. Mere intention to journey will not get anywhere. You really need to walk and start moving. Only then progression will take place. And therefore, I'm now going to talk about how that happens, how that progression happens in the context of spiritual journey or growth.
Ranyigi dewa tati paji, minjivi dewa yunga tobu gura, e tobi jizim towa de tijian tso sabata, gachin diru yunga nyi dingi pando gure.
So, one's aim through practice is initially to achieve the state of a perfection, so that free of all physical and psychological constraints, you would have all the know-how, all the skills to help other people, and you would have overcome And you would be equipped with all necessary skills. For that to happen, two things are indispensable at all times. And that is to wipe away the hurdles of negative propensities and to furnish the mind then with positive propensities. So these are indispensable.
Rangi dungati kencho gila maagwa da, na kencho ga suja wa tenleo yo maare. Ta rangi dungati yenji teba da, yenji da tundi chejao ya maare. Ta rangi dungati kani shema, zonge de toma roni de, roni de dungati roni zio. Ndi ita rangi te suvi dungati rangi mewa sogo waare.
So, because our problems, whether problems in the form of suffering of a body or suffering of a mind was not created by God or an external being. Our happiness, whether physical or psychological, spiritual, never comes from an external creator, an external being. Nor do these pleasant and unpleasant experiences that one has never come from other people. These two experiences necessarily come from actions one performs. So one's action is a source of one's own experience. In other words, it's like saying you are the source of what you experience. So our suffering cannot come from God. For God is thought of as God in a general sense. God is thought of as all merciful, all omniscient, all omnipotent. One that is omnipotent, omniscient, and powerful, and you know, universally loving, will never harm, will never inflict any suffering. So that alone is strong enough a proof that sufferings do not come from external creator of God.
Ta jong ge jung na ge yin ge ni chang chang yin ju tang jun ni shi wa yin na yin me da de de jung ma yong ro ni jung ma yong wa cha gu bi wa ye yin me da de na ya ro ni jung ma de ye ma le ro ro ka wa yin na rang jung ma de ye ge ma yin yin me da de de jung ma me ro wa ti chu ni gu me do wa.
So nor do our problems, our suffering, come from, emanate from other people, other beings. Although we tend to think, we tend to blame other people for our misfortune, for our suffering. If it were the case that our sufferings come from other people, then you would never ever experience the kind of suffering that you experience now, the suffering of being born, suffering of constant aging, incessant aging, and suffering of intermittent sickness, and the suffering of death, and many other kinds of suffering. So you would never experience that if you live all by yourself in no man's land. Yet, Even if you were to live in a no man's land all by yourself, you will never stop growing old, and ultimately you will die. And these are some of the severe sufferings. So that is again quite plain to see that our sufferings do not emanate from other people either.
Then the kuk standa ten ti non ka chawa she ti java sa te go to ye ten sa pa ji ne ma to ba in di ko de ten ti di kar che ji de chu ji go po ji de de in ma lu ta di ma ko ra jo jo she ye in ma ta che ko di ma she ji ki ga yo shore
I said this, and the teachings confirm this. As long as you carry this kind of a life, karma-born life, karma-induced life, and delusion induces karma, karma induces this life. So this life is called afflicted life or contaminated life. And therefore, this is a pre-packed with all the causes of suffering of a body and mind. And therefore, it's like a potent method that has the capacity to attract suffering. Or it is like a perfect fertile field where the shoots of suffering cannot help but inescapably will grow. So as long as we carry the baggage of afflicted aggregates of the body and mind, no matter wherever in samsara you may be, even if you are by yourself, as long as we carry these, and this body is made to produce suffering, experience suffering, and therefore how can you not experience suffering? Unless we manage to avert the cause of such a rebirth, it will keep repeating itself. So our life, as compared to the life of animals and so on, is no doubt a better life. Unfortunately, our life still is samsaric, mundane life. And this form of a higher mundane life has come from karma and delusion. So what kind of karma has produced this life? This life that we have called this life, this precious human life, has been born from afflicted virtue or non-liberating virtue. So what has influenced, or what has been the underlying influence of that of the afflicted virtue or the underlying afflicted virtue or the non-liberating virtue is means negative propensities or negative emotions or negative thoughts. So whatever is born of afflicted virtue, not to talk of negative and deadly negative actions, whatever is born of all negative actions and delusions is going to be nothing but suffering. Even those which are born of afflicted virtue and negative thoughts is still subject to suffering. So in our bid to ensure that the next life is better than this life, where it will still be subject to suffering, but relatively fewer suffering and a better form of happiness. What we need for such a thing is to remove negative causes and to cultivate positive causes. And this is done, these two things are done through the six preliminary practices that we have gone through before. So, the second thing on the path is we need to adhere to vows and commitments, promises that one has made. So once we proclaim ourselves to the Buddhists, by implication you have said, or one has said, I will ground my life in the ethics of restraining from 10 harmful actions, 3 of a body, 4 of speech and 3 of mind. So that is a foregone conclusion. And if one happens to be a Buddhist monk or nun, or rather a novice monk or nun, you have 36 vows. And if one happens to be a fully ordained monk or ordained nun, you have 250 restrictions on a human right. So sorry, 250 vows. So if one adheres to the basic ethics of restraining from 10 harmful actions or 10 unwholesome actions plus whatever one has taken on, then there's no doubt the outcome of outcome from such a controlled restraint is nothing but wholesome. And then on top of that, people, I'm not just saying you here, but people, Buddhist people everywhere, they flock to a place where there's the initiation is happening. And they flock like mad and trying to get initiation. At the initiations, the foremost thing that happens that is important is to keep many commitments and vows, and the tantric vows and root tantric vows and secondary tantric vows, root bodhisattva vows and secondary bodhisattva vows are far exceedingly harder to keep than a novice monk, fully ordained monk vows and nuns. And if one does succeed in keeping them, one's progression on the path is swift. The vows and will really promote growth. If the vows are not kept and in tatters, then undesirable consequences would befall one. So when you take initiation, then you get a second set of three jewels. Okay, Buddhists universally turn to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha are called three jewels, and they are external three jewels. Now, when you take tantric initiation, you get a second set of three jewels, and they are gurus, meditation deities, dakinis, daka and dakinis. So they are, you know, very sacred, personal three jewels, and commitments in relation to them. So, once a person has taken tantric vow, and then there are a minor commitment, although the word is minor, but not in any case minor, it is quite serious commitment of participating in bi-monthly, you know, pujas and top offerings. These are integral practice. And then in terms of root tantric vow, for example, if one breaks a single root tantric vow, the consequence is so severe that it can only be purified, it can only be got rid of by either taking initiation afresh from a guru, secondly, by doing a qualifying retreat, never devotional. And by doing qualifier retreat, during which you would be required to say hundreds and thousands of mantras and so on. And only then can the root fraction will be mented.
Imagine. 以前不知道过,
or the root vow can be, a fraction of the root vow can be repaired by saying 100 syllable mantra of a Bodhisattva 100,000 times, which is itself quite difficult and demanding. So, have you been to initiation places? And have you had lamas given water?
So,
what is the lama? Can you recall what the lama said from when you're were drinking the water? So the Lama would have said, this is the mountain water. This is the mountain lava of hell. If you drink it, if you abide by the commitment, it is a nectar. It will give you Buddhahood. If you break the vow, it will become the molten lava. So what is important obviously for everyone concerned is to be fully informed and to become fully conversant with the vows one needs to keep. Because ignorance is no excuse. Ignorance of the commitments, ignorance of the vows is no excuse and doesn't give leniency. Because of three qualities of breaking vows, first is ignorance. And therefore, if one doesn't know them, then you will excuse yourself very easily and say, it doesn't matter really, that's it. And kind of thing, one becomes light-hearted, even flippant about the vows. Unfortunately, the negative propensities of the fraction will incur every day. Anyway, Dhamsik Dhamba means vows and commitments. Commitments pertain to the things you have vowed to do as a result of initiation. And the vows themselves are, as I've said before, Bodhisattva vows, Praktimoksha, okay, individual emancipation vows, and so on. So Geshe-la says, if one becomes fully knowledgeable about the practice of Tantra, particularly the vows, and never breaks the vow, then Buddhahood is possible in one lifetime. I think I did share this anecdote of somebody who kept the vows to the letter. This anecdote is about Kempo Achung, an abbot of a certain monastery in eastern Tibet, where I came from, Geshe-la says, or where I come from. And the story happened not more than 10 years ago, even less than 10 years. So there was this Kempo Achung who was asked by his guru, another monk called Genshira. And the moment Kempo Achung heard that his guru wanted to see him, he did not wait a single moment. He hurried so much that he managed to put one shoes on, the other foot was bare, and he walked straight to the guru. And it was quite a few days on foot journey, but he went straight to the guru. And he took guru's word very seriously. And the guru-disciple relationship between them was so impeccable. Anyway, as a result of, relying perfectly on the inner three jewels, one of them was the guru, remember? Then when Kempo Achung himself died, his body became rainbow body. He attained rainbow body, and as a result, when he died, he went to Pure Land. When he went to Pure Land, he even took his own body. His body was nowhere to be seen, and so that is the. This is a story that highlights how it is possible to attain magnificent results by adhering to the commitment. And the fourth thing we need when listening to Namrim teaching is not to let your mind wander off to other places. Let your mind be where you are present bodily. I will stop here tonight, and I wanted to share these because these points that I've just raised are crucial for the progression on the path, and one of which was Damtik Dhamba, the vows and commitments. Once you commit to doing something, then it is in one's advantage in terms of the growth and success, then one sticks to the commitments, no matter rain or shine, just stick and do things according to the commitments. as I said before, teachings, Tantric teaching says, if the vows are kept, then Buddhahood is possible even in one lifetime.
Right, okay, yeah.